Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you, your host. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Thanks for tuning in today, or if you're listening on the podcast, I appreciate it. Always happy to be here with you. Got a good show here for you today, folks. We recorded much of the show at our friend's place there, the Bakery Bar, over there, 1179 Annunciation, as we like to say, in the lower Garden District, right by the highway right there. And Bakery Bar is a spot run by the folks that do Debbie Does Dobage, Dobage Cake. We talk about that a little bit. And what they do every Tuesday, actually, is it's a very popular place with folks in the service industry. And if you listened about a month ago, we did the same thing. We're doing this once a month, is we go to Bakery Bar on a Tuesday. And, you know, it's kind of an off day for a lot of folks in the service industry. And they turn up and have brunch, and they do bottomless mimosas. And it's just sort of a good time to talk to folks, a lot of bartenders, servers, managers of restaurants, these sorts of things. And it's a great way to go connect with people. So we just set up shop there in Bakery Bar and kind of see who drops by, and we sort of talk about whatever happens, whatever is going on, whatever ideas people have, whatever they want to talk about. So that's what we did. So pretty much the whole show was recorded there on Tuesday. Some interesting things. Let's see, we had the gang from Hoo Hoo's Ginger Beer, which is a locally owned ginger beer company. They dropped by, and we talked a little bit about what they're up to. Tasted their very nice ginger beer. It's available on tap around town. We talk about that. Jeff Schwartz, who is the general manager of Bakery Bar, popped in there with the Hoo Hoo folks, and Jeff is a fantastic bartender in his own right, not just a GM there at the restaurant, and he runs the bar there as well. And we make a drink that's a famous drink. It's called the Suffering Bastard. Has a very interesting bit of history connected to World War II, the British Army, Rommel, the Battle of El Alamein. So he whips up a bit of a Suffering Bastard there for us. We taste that, and he tells us the story of the drink. Very fascinating stuff. We talk a little bit about king cake, of course, the traditional food that we have here, one of the traditional foods that we have here, and certainly one associated very strongly with carnival season and Mardi Gras. Always fun. Mark Shetler, who is the general manager of Bar Tonique there on Rampart Street in the French Quarter. He's also the president of the NOLA chapter, the New Orleans chapter, of course, of the U.S. Bartenders Guild, which is a great organization both in general and locally. And Nathan Dalton in that segment also joins us. He's the food and beverage director of Catahoula Hotel. And we have a very interesting conversation about Pisco and Mezcal, two traditional beverages in their respective countries, Pisco, of course, in Peru, Mezcal in Mexico, and they share some very strong cultural ties, we'll put it that way, to where they're made. And drinks that these two things are both very popular in the United States and with bartenders these days. And we talk about some of the ramifications, maybe misunderstandings, some other things with Pisco and Mezcal. Mark continues on the show with us from there. We talk a little bit more about what the U.S. Bartenders Guild here in New Orleans is up to. They're doing some really, really good stuff. It's not just how to make drinks, friends. They do a lot of really interesting things. So Mark talks a little bit about that. Jeff comes back on the show with us, and Steve Yamada joins us. Steve's over there at 12 Mile Limit, another great bartender in town. We just sort of ramble on about different things. We talk quite a bit about Mardi Gras and carnival drinks and drinking habits. Yes, we do that here during Mardi Gras and carnival season, on Mardi Gras, I should say, and carnival season. And Steve sticks with us there for the last segment, and then Mark Shetler comes back on, and we close out the show. We talk a little bit about so-called listicles, that term, what that means. Listicles are the top 10 list. We have such a fascination, these days with top 10 lists and heat maps and where to eat now kind of things. And, you know, that's not what we do on this show. I think you know that if you listen to the show. Certainly, hey, we talk about some trends from time to time. If there's something that's, you know, an award that's given or things like that, we do that. But driving everything through a top 10 list or a heat map, what to do now, I think is sometimes damaging to places basically enjoying a real experience somewhere. So we talk a little bit about that. I did want to mention too, last week's show, relates to this to a degree. We had Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group and Sean Joseph of Kenton's on, and we talked about some threats to the restaurant industry in New Orleans and in general. Specifically, we focused on the town here to a large degree anyway. And then we also talked about a little bit more of a focus there on independent sit-down restaurants. And one of the things that relates to these sort of top 10 lists is they're always built around, you know, what to go do, what's new, What are you doing different? As opposed to maybe doing something really well consistently over a period of time is also an important concept. So I mentioned that because the podcast is available. Go check out NOLADrinks.com. It's on iTunes, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, of course, on our website, as I said, NOLADrinks.com. Check that out. You know, all of our shows are available that way. But this listicles thing that we touch on with Mark and Steve at the end of the show, I think relates to that. Friends, a few things that are going on around town that I wanted to touch on. An event coming up tomorrow evening. If you're listening to the podcast, it could be this evening. It's Friday, February 3rd, and it's called Nuit Belge, Belgian Night, if you will. And it's all about beers. It's all about Belgian beers, as you might guess. Very interesting event. It's at Generations Hall, which is at 310 Andrew Higgins. It's a paired event. So a lot of these beers apparently are not available in the U.S. They're not distributed here. So some special selections. If you don't know Belgian beers, you should. Man, beautiful beers. Those are, in general, broad sweeping thing here. My favorite beers in the world generally come out of Belgium. So really neat stuff. The tickets are $99 a person online. It's Nuit Belge, NUITBELGE.com. You can find the ticket. So it's $99 plus about a $7.50 service fee. There's a VIP package too for $149. But some pretty impressive stuff as far as what they're doing with the beers. I don't have a specific beer list, but there's a food pairing component to all of this that's put together with the beers. Some great restaurants: Angeline, Boucherie, Butcher, Compère Lapin, Coquette, Dominica, Grand Isle, Latai, Maypop, Patois, Pêche, Tableau, Primitivo, and Toups South. That is quite a lineup, friends, of restaurants. So check that out. Again, NuitBelge.com. Great Belgian beers, great food. Lowe's Hotel is doing something rather interesting. They're doing a cross-country pop-up traveling bar. And what they're doing is this bar is constructed from an old elevator car. Now, I'm looking at a picture of it. It's not too small, friends. It's a little bit bigger than, you know, you're not going to all pile into an elevator and have drinks. But the whole thing is sort of a traveling road show. And I guess it's going to go to all of the 25 or so Lowe's properties around the country. The stop here is in New Orleans, of course. It's going on right now through the end of the month. And it's a sort of harkening back to what they're calling the golden age of cocktails. So, you know, 150 years ago or so. And they're making a lot of traditional drink recipes and some older drink recipes in kind of this unique environment. Everywhere it goes, I guess that they reassemble the thing, and then you can go kind of have an interesting experience. It's there in the Lowe's Hotel, which is at 300 Poydras, and the bar is open, let's see, Tuesdays and Thursdays from 6 to 9 and Fridays from 7 to 10 through February 27th. You can, for more information, you can visit lowshotels.com, lowshotels.com. Pretty interesting stuff. Wanted to mention also Travel and Leisure magazine. Okay, so here's one of the things, not a list, kind of, maybe, whatever, I apologize. Voted New Orleans the second most charming city. I guess it was the second most charming city in the country. I think we all know that. If we live here, we know that, kind of interesting. But they say, among other things, between the graceful architecture, inviting shops along Magazine Street, and cultural quirks like the Voodoo Museum, the Crescent City downright intoxicated readers with charm. And that was even before they hit the bars. Well, there you go. As part of the poll of their readers, bars rank number one in the country. Go figure. And also at the top of the list for notable restaurants. They mention a few of those. And they talk about some of the other things, like if you are on the other side of the Mississippi River in the Algiers Point neighborhood of the city, the second oldest neighborhood in town, of course, walk along the levee. Nice thing to do. Take the ferry over from Canal Street to cross the river. Good stuff. So, folks, come on back here to the NOLA Drink Show. If you want more information on that, check out travelandleisure.com. Yeah. Hey, come on back to the show. We're going to be doing the whole bakery bar thing, friends. Come on back.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass wine you drink.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars, and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in. As I mentioned before, we are recording this at Bakery Bar, 1179 Annunciation Street, I guess technically in the Lower Garden District. We've been doing this is the second time that we've done this, where we're kind of live here at the service industry-oriented brunch that they do, Bottomless Mimosas, a lot of fun. So if you're hearing this live on the air, you're hearing it on Thursday, so this is a couple days ago. If you're hearing it on the podcast, well, it's some days in the future. I'll let you do the math. That's not my strong point about how many days ago it was. But kicking things off right away here, I'm pleased to be joined by Benton Bourgeois and Matthew Gardner from Hoo Hoo Ginger Beer. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for being here today. Appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
Good.
Nice. One of our favorite accounts.
Yeah, that's cool. And it's good that it works out that they actually serve cocktails on a Tuesday, because we can all see that we're very well armed here.
Tuesday is normally our production day, so we're happy to be off.
Oh, that's good. Okay, cool.
Don't
be shy. Get right up there. Yesterday. Get right up there in the microphone, Ben.
Yeah, we made a whole lot of ginger beer yesterday so that we could be here today.
There you go. Cool. And you guys are well represented here by the team, which is very cool. Yeah, awesome. Well, you guys, do me a favor. Tell me a little bit about, let's start with your ginger beer, and tell me a little bit about the company, Hoo Hoo Ginger Beer.
We're fresh. We juice our ginger fresh. Juice lemon as well. There's no preservatives, no artificial flavors. And we do have a shelf life, so it's got to stay cold. But generally, we're just a very, very spicy ginger beer.
Now, you guys, when you make yours, I know there's kind of different ways to make it, right? Mm-hmm. So yours is non-alcoholic, correct?
Correct.
And I was reading, I was always under the impression that if you called it ginger beer, it was sort of it had to be brewed in some fashion.
Sure.
And ginger ale was just the carbonated soda. But I'm reading that there's a lot of people out there that actually make technically what I would call ginger ale or ginger soda, and they call it ginger beer,
mm-hmm.
which seems kind of crazy to me.
it's a bit of a misnomer, I guess, now. Traditionally, before the days of carbonation, obviously in the United Kingdom, where ginger beer originated, they did brew using yeast and the natural carbonation process. In America here, since ginger beer has become back, you know, more popular, most ginger beers are just carbonated, force carbonated using carbon dioxide.
Okay.
Like a traditional soda. Typically, the separation between the two, ginger ale is usually cooked into like a syrup. Okay. And our ginger beer, we don't cook it. We use no heat. We juice it fresh.
Okay. And so, and then the carbonation, then how does the carbonation take
we
place?
We force carbonate with carbon dioxide
CO2.
In kegs.
Okay. Oh, in kegs. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very cool. So you guys, you said no preservative. It's all fresh, which
yes,
is cool.
Sir.
Tell me a little bit about the company itself, a little bit of the history.
So we took over last April. It was founded by Sam Hahuli, who started the company about 2.5-3 years ago. And he had a few accounts around town, and he decided to move back to Seattle and open a bar and wanted to leave the business here. And I'd always been a big fan of the product, had kind of watched him grow from day one. And we took over April 1st last year, so we're coming up on a year now. And we're doing a big push to really grow the brand and become an institution in New Orleans.
And yeah, cool. And you get, so you guys have a, it's interesting because you have a pretty big team, right? I mean, and everybody's turned out today, which is very cool.
Yeah.
So you guys are both co-owner operators.
We are, yeah.
And how many co-owner operators are there?
Those are the other three over there.
Okay, so there's five of you all in total.
Five together. Like, we're all in the service industry, bartenders and servers, and been working in craft cocktail bars for years now and just wanted to translate making product behind a bar and like let's do it at scale and let's supply other bars with it. And
yeah, okay. Now Ben, you mentioned, so you're working at the bar at the Ponch Train Hotel.
Yes.
That's very cool. How long have you been there, man?
I opened it, or reopened it, last June we reopened. Yeah. It's gone incredibly well. It's definitely one of the busiest new bars in town. We have the rooftop bar, and then which is Hot Tin, and then you have Bayou Bar on the first floor. Of course, Caribbean Room, the fine dining restaurant, but we have the best view in New Orleans in that rooftop, and
no
you
doubt.
Can see from the dome to the bridge, and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's one of the unique places where you can actually see back into the quarter, which is really yes. cool, because most everything else is obstructed.
Yeah, we're the high point in the way. Garden District, so
yeah,
there, you can
yeah.
see everything.
That's cool. Yeah, awesome. Now, Matthew, you're also tending bar, and you work at Kingfish.
At Kingfish, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
And we actually... we don't carry the ginger beer there like they do at Ponch Train, but we do produce a ginger lemon shrub mm-hmm. for Kingfish, and they brine a pork chop. They let a big bone-in pork chop sit about 3 days, I think, let that marinate, and then they finish off in the smoker after they grill it, and then serve it with like a carrot puree and braised cabbage, and then topped with pickled mustard seeds. So,
oh, that sounds pretty good.
Hopefully, in the future, we'll have ginger beer there. Yeah, just a bartender at Kingfish.
So you got. So what you're saying is you got to lean on them a little bit, or you got to kind of work insidiously to get it in there and persuade.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Well, that's cool. Right on, guys. So, let's do me a favor. Let's talk a little bit about the process a little bit more, because I'm very interested. So how does the actual chemistry of this work if there's not fermentation, right? And so how does it actually go down then?
So essentially our product is four ingredients. It's sugar, water, lemon, ginger. But we buy a couple cases of ginger beer. Or a couple cases of ginger, peel it, juice it, juice fresh lemon. And then we batch everything together. We make a simple syrup with the sugar. And from there, you load it into Cornelius kegs, Pepsi kegs, some people call them. Then we force carbonate, hook it up to CO2 for a couple days, and that is it. And like the important thing is to not allow it to oxidize. You don't want that lemon sitting out. You need to get it cold as fast as you can, get okay. that CO2 on there, get the oxygen away
it
from it.
Keep it sealed environment then, yeah.
And, I mean, it's completely different from everything that's on the market. Like, when you put something on a bottle and it's shelf-stable for a year at a time, you're compromising there. There's always things that when you read those ingredient labels on anything that's sitting on a shelf in the store, there's always some mysteries on there. There's natural and artificial flavorings being added. Sometimes you'll see capsaicin added to kind of simulate a ginger heat. Because once you get away from the fresh ginger, you kind of need to fake it.
And yeah, right.
We don't.
So when you guys then you put it in kegs, is it only sold on tap, or do you guys sell it in bottles as well?
For the time being, we're just on taps okay. At our accounts. Poncha Train, I fill growlers from some kegs I have stored in a cooler, and we just shuffle those around and bring them to each well because we have two different bars. But soon, the next few months, we'll be in bottles. We've got some accounts that are very interested. They won't give up a draft line.
No, it's always tough real estate space,
yeah.
right?
The product does incredibly well. Poncha Train's been a boon for us. Moscow Mules, like when I look at year over year, like we sold a few thousand of them this past year.
Wow, it's one of the drinks that fuels the town. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, the Moscow Mule has become the new Cosmo. And
yeah.
we're happy to piggyback on its success.
Well, and you guys are also here at Bakery Bar, right? Is one of your yes. clients, good man Jeff Schwartz there. When you mentioned one of the drinks that I actually like, and I want to figure out, I'll have to get some for you guys somehow to do this at home. When I make a Pimm's cup, I prefer to do it with ginger beer,
absolutely.
Personally, because I think a lot of people monkey around.
Yeah,
and a little bit of dry curacao, Pimm's,
okay.
A little bit of mint, and muddled cucumber. And like a quarter ounce of the Pierre Franz dry curacao.
Nice.
That stuff's fantastic.
I've made like two good drinks in my life, and that's one of them.
Right.
Cool.
Our stuff works particularly well with a Pimm's cup. because of how spicy it is and how dry it is.
Right. Okay.
You know, Pimm's is sweet by itself, and that's one thing with, you know, Pimm's cups around town. Sometimes they're a little too sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And ginger beers typically are a little on the sweeter side too. Our stuff's not, so the ginger really comes through well in a cocktail like the Pimm's cup.
That's nice. See, like you said, you get that heat kind of shines mm-hmm. through and stuff, which mm-hmm. I think is.
And it's, as we said earlier, it's fresh ginger heat, and that's it. We use over a pound of ginger per gallon. So
wow.
In a 5-gallon keg, there's, you know, 5 or 6 gallons of ginger juice in there.
So, and you guys are putting your juicers through the paces then?
We do, yeah.
Yeah.
They do good work for us.
That's good. Yeah, I'm sure there's, you know, well, I'd be curious to know what brand of juicer. Do you guys have a big industrial juicer?
Omega 8006.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Always juicers have like the best names. Like there's actually an Acme one, you know, and all that kind of stuff, believe it or not.
We're looking to buy something bigger, but it's hard to find. Like, we use the slow masticating juicers. They're not the...
Yeah, okay.
The issue with some of the larger ones, they... The centrifugal motion, it oxidizes the product as you're juicing.
Right.
So these are slow juicers, but I mean, they're tanks. They can crank out and grind through ginger. And the big ones, they whip oxygen into the juice as you're doing it. So
okay.
You end up, your shelf life goes down.
Interesting. Okay.
So
yeah, I would never have thought
we're
that.
Trying to figure out a bigger system, but these are the best things we're using. So we usually fire up 2 of them and
hand feed the omegas,
and,
right?
Yeah. It's a process.
Yeah. The one thing we don't want to compromise is the integrity of our product. And that's the good thing about the juicers that we use. It really holds all those particles together well. Doesn't oxidize and it keeps it, I mean, it's as fresh as you can possibly get.
Cool. You guys, Matthew and Ben, we're going to take a little break here on the show, and
sure,
we're going to pull
sure.
Jeff in. We're going to taste a little bit of the stuff, and
awesome.
Then I think we're going to taste a little bit of a historical cocktail featuring your ginger beer. Guys, we're talking with the gentleman, two-fifths, is that right, of the, ownership,
yes.
of the ownership group of Hoo-Hoo Ginger Beer. Come on back to the show.
Else they just too lazy. Just with a grand zombie, my yellow belt.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
It's carnival time. Are you ready for parades, revelry, and the ultimate cocktail experience? Victory is located in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission is to preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy this holiday. Give us a call to book your next private event. 504-522-8664, 339 Barone Street.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Last train a running between the water with the power line. Last train a running around the hill. Last train a leaving on the quarter.
Everybody. Welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. We are at Bakery Bar 1179 Annunciation Street, and we are chatting now. Well, we've kind of swapped seats here a little bit. We're chatting with Ben Bourgeois from Hoo-Hoo's Ginger Beer, who's stayed with us. And then we have brought in Mr. Jeff Schwartz, who is the man here at the Bakery Bar. Are you run the bar, Jeff? Are you the general manager?
Yeah, I'm the general manager. I just say this is my house. It's just my house.
You don't leave, and I know
not much.
I know that we're gonna come back to you in a little bit and talk about King Cake Mayhem, but we'll get there. Right now, we're talking about ginger beer, and so Ben, thanks for being here. And I'm gonna taste a little bit. But tell us a little bit. So what we're doing here first is we're tasting the ginger beer straight up, and. Well, you guys have a sip, then somebody's got to talk while I take a sip. So go ahead and talk, Jeff.
Well, one of the things that I've always really liked about this Hoo-Hoo's Ginger Brew is it's just a very clean hit of ginger flavor. There's not a lot of complications. You know, so there's not vanilla and allspice and all this other stuff. It's that's a thing I really look for in cocktail ingredients is... it either needs to be very, very complete on its own, or it needs to be sort of very streamlined, clean. Like when you add this ginger beer to a cocktail, you're adding ginger. You're not adding ginger and this and this and this.
Right.
So it's really easy to build a cocktail with.
And you're getting a nice citrus, obviously, from the lemon. These guys use fresh lemon juice, Ben, as you said.
Absolutely.
And that shows through really nicely. And it's one of the things. It's very enjoyable because I think you were saying this, Jeff, is that lots of times I think ginger beers will kind of bog down and be a little syrupy and a little, you know, kind of too viscous and a little too heavy. And this finish is really clean, and there's a nice acidity, and that ginger burn, the natural ginger burn, really actually hangs through very nicely.
Yeah, it holds up in cocktails really well. Yeah. That's kind of our goal. Like when I'm working with cocktails, I want potent flavors that I can blend, but I don't want it to get washed out. And
right.
Once you start diluting it with some ice and a spirit, we want that ginger to still be there.
But what do you guys find, if, say, with the lemon component in this? Because the lemon component is very present in a nice way. You have to kind of watch then what other acid or citrus that you bring to the table in the drink, right?
Yeah. One would have to be pretty. Yeah, one should be careful about how much citrus you're adding. If juice plus ginger beer plus et cetera, et cetera. I'll say like after like a day at Tails, I don't want any more limes for a week.
Yeah, the acid is a killer at a certain point, isn't it?
Yeah. I can't drink a daiquiri for months after Tails.
right. Yeah, okay, so, and keeping that balance is really important, and I think, like we're talking about here with this one. Well, anything you want to add about the ginger beer specifically before we kind of jump into the cocktail thing? Because we're going to do a Suffering Bastard cocktail that Jeff made. Any other thoughts that pop in your head?
Ben? Nothing in particular. It is a great hangover cure, as we were just talking about.
Let's talk about the restorative stuff here real quick.
So fresh ginger juice has quite a bit of potassium in it, which I find you need to restore your electrolytes whenever you've had a long night, and... this is a great way to do it. It also settles the stomach.
Yeah, well, that actually ties in exactly with the cocktail that we're going to sip on. This is the Suffering Bastard. P.S. I'm going to savor saying bastard as many times as I can.
It's not one of the seven words that George Carlin laid down. You're good.
I know. So The Suffering Bastard, I think, has the very best story in Cocktails. And what really helps it along is that it's a close enough to modern that we have, like, some, like we know it's actually true, and it's not, you know, tall tales about Antoine Peychaud inventing the first cocktail 50 years after it was actually invented. The Suffering Bastard originates from World War II in Cairo. So the British officer corps and the press corps was all staying in this hotel called Shepherd's in Cairo while they're kind of trying to do battle with Erwin Rommel, the Desert Fox. Mm-hmm. So the bartender there at the Long Bar, Joe Sialam, is just kind of a legendary bartender and went on, you know, to honestly, like, full-on international acclaim.
Was he an Egyptian dude? Or do we know?
I think he immigrated to Egypt. He was a really interesting character in his own right, not just about this drink. I think he eventually got run out of Egypt under suspicion of being a spy, in part because, you know, with his own fame and his the glitz and glamour of the bar, he came into contact with lots of heads of state, especially ones that were suspicious to the Egyptian government at the time. Mm-hmm. So he got run out of Cairo under suspicion of being a spy. He could speak a whole bunch of languages. So, like, I don't know, maybe he was. He claims he wasn't, but who knows?
So it's a really interesting story with the cocktail.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So basically, one day they get a telegram delivered to the Shepherd's Hotel from Erwin Rommel making dinner reservations for that night. So he was sending a very clear message, basically, guys, I'm coming for you. And this was an unfortunate day for them because they were all very, very hungover. So
he really wasn't coming to eat. He was sending a message.
He was sending a message to the British officers that I'm coming for Cairo right now.
Mm-hmm.
Come and get it. And they weren't ready for that at that point in time. They had a big night. So the officers, they all scrambled to go out to the front. They send a message back to Joe Sialam at the hotel, like, we need hangover cures. We need them very bad. We need the hair of the dog, whatever you've got. So Joe Sialam fills every pot, every pan, every canteen, any vessel that will hold drink, pays a bunch of taxi drivers to take it out to the front, and the British went on to win the Battle of El Alamein.
Mm-hmm.
And that drink was the Suffering Bastard right in front of us. So he
whipped up a massive batch of hangover cure.
Yeah.
Got it out to the front.
Yeah.
Brought the British guys back around.
Yeah.
And then saved the day and won the Battle of El Alamein.
Yeah, it's awesome, right?
Yeah, it is. That is awesome. And this is, what is in a...
Suffering Bastard has gin, cognac, lime cordial, Angostura bitters, and ginger beer.
Okay, cool. And do you mind telling us what proportions that you use?
Yeah, absolutely. My measures are 3/4 of an ounce of cognac, 3/4 of an ounce of gin, 1 ounce of our... We make a house-made lime cordial. You could substitute roses, and it might be a little bit different.
It'd be a little sweeter, right?
Yeah. And then we do 2 ounces... two dashes Angostura bitters, and then kind of top with the Hoo-Hoo's ginger beer.
Great. And the ginger beer shines through really nicely in this. Benton, do you have pretty much a similar take on the beverage as far as how you make it and stuff like that? Or?
Absolutely. I have not actually ever made a Suffering Bastard before.
Okay.
Yeah. This is a new one to me.
Yeah, so it's like really good, really drying. Like the Angostura kind of helps dry it out with the gin. And I feel like the spice of the ginger definitely comes through. It definitely comes off as, you know, the constant cocktail refrain. Well, it's not too sweet, is it? It's like, well, no, it's not too sweet.
It's got a little bit of sweet up front, but then there's the ginger comes through in the mid palate really nicely and then hangs through the end, and you get the nice acidity that hangs through the end as well.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this one. So this was a staple on, like, tiki cocktail menus for a long, long time. And then they even did variations because, you know, it's already gin and cognac. So people just say, well, what if we throw in bourbon? What if we throw in this? So there's all these variations that are like dying bastards and, you know, all that sort of thing. So it, you know, you can basically make a Long Island iced tea, throw in lime cordial, Angostura bitters, and ginger beer, and that's a dead bastard? I don't know.
Something like that. Some sort of bastard. We'll just say bastard again, I mean, because we can. Well, you guys, really quick, because we got about a minute or so left here before got to close the segment. Benton, tell people, aside from Bakery Bar, and you mentioned the Pond Strain Hotel where you are, where can people find Hoo Hoos?
So, Avenue Pub, 12-mile limit, Gasa Gasa, Markey's in the Bywater. Recently, Cooter Brown's we have added on. There's a few other out there that we're working on that should be up and running soon. But you can always check out our Facebook page. We'll have up-to-date list of where you can find us.
Very cool. Thank you so much, Ben, for being here.
You're welcome.
To the rest of the gang. And Jeff, we'll be back with you in a minute here. We're going to talk King Cake Mayhem and all that good stuff.
You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah. But and thanks, Ben, to the team and everybody else.
Oh, thanks for having us.
No problem. My pleasure. Friends, coming back to the NOLA Drink Show.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar, located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. We are at Bakery Bar, as you know, and 1179 Annunciation Street. And Jeff has stayed with us. Jeff Schwartz, the general manager here at Bakery Bar. Jeff, thanks for having us today again, man.
Oh, yeah, it's always fun to host. You know, we get fun visitors. It's a good Tuesday morning fun time.
Yeah, absolutely. We are enjoying bottomless mimosas. I enjoyed a suffering bastard, so we're saying bastard again. Let's just get another bastard in there.
Dang old bastard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we were talking a little bit. We are, as we know, most of us know listening to the show, and if you're from out of town and you don't know, we are in the middle of carnival season, and Mardi Gras is approaching about a month on February 28th, actual Fat Tuesday. So that is Mardi Gras, and what we say, technically to be correct, is we are in the middle of carnival season because Mardi Gras is one day.
That's very true, yes.
Yeah,
it might just be gras season. Everyone puts on a few between the drinking and the stale Popeyes and whatever else you're subsisting on in these trying times.
Exactly, and you segue beautifully. You teed me up great because one of the things that we subsist on traditionally as well as substantively here in during carnival season in New Orleans and the environs is king cake. And you guys here at Bakery Bar have been going through the king cake juggernaut.
Let me tell you a story. So Bakery Bar is owned by Debbie Does Dobage, and they've been making Dobage cakes, which is a sort of traditional New Orleans sort of birthday cake type of thing. What makes Dobage Dobage is layers of cake with pudding.
Yep.
And so Debbie's been doing this for a couple of years. We've made Dobage king cakes for a couple of years, and, you know, We did it this year too, you know, in the new venue with Bakery Bar. So we're hoping to be maybe a little more high profile, but you know, it's kind of routine. So we put out a very vanilla Facebook post that, like, hey everybody, it's king cake time. Come get your king cake Dobage. 1.2 million people have seen that post by now, And this might surprise you, but we can't make 1.2 million king cakes.
No.
Yeah, we don't have the capacity to make two king cakes for every man, woman, and child in the parish. We don't have that kind of capacity. So, you know, it's been, honestly, it's been a huge boon for us. It's doubled our sales overnight. It's been really great. It's also, doubling your sales overnight is really, really difficult. So it's been a wild ride. You know, we have to sort of play like, you know, like Seinfeld, we're playing cake Nazi, like, you know, two slices per person. You know, we stock king cake in the morning, every morning. And, when it runs out, it runs out. So we're getting a few, king cake babies. You know, generally 90-95% of people are very great. Some people are babies about it. Mm-hmm. And
well, so you're not talking about the babies in the king cake.
Oh, yes. Is that an entendre?
Yes, it is. It is. Very nice. Well done.
anyways, yeah. So we get some king cake babies. But also I it's so hard for me to grasp. Like there's full on king cake mania pandemonium. Like, so, like I said, we're stocking in the morning, and when they're gone, they're gone. And so every morning we have people waiting outside before we open. It was this Saturday. We had someone sitting on our stoop at 7 a.m., and we don't open till 10. Someone waited 3 hours just to be sure that they got their king cake. We've had people drive in from Biloxi, Alabama, Tennessee, Texas, like, it's bonkers. Full disclosure, full honesty, like, it's all right. It's a pretty good cake. I don't think it's the best cake we make. It's king cake flavored dobash. It's good. I think we make a great product. If I was making a top five list of all the best flavors we make, I don't think it would crack.
Even in the top five. Yeah.
I think it's this weird sort of target fixation. People saw it on Facebook, and they saw it on Facebook, so they want it, and they won't take anything else.
Yeah, and as you well know, Jeff, that, you know, obviously king cake has been traditional here for forever, and then there's, you know, different bakeries and stuff that are famous around town.
Certainly,
and
Hales, Randazzo's, etc.
Randazzo's, exactly, all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that we know too is that very commonly, people are very partisan to king cake that they like the best, and it can cause turf wars, actually.
What filling,
exactly,
all that stuff.
What is actually king cake? Because sometimes if you put different things on the top or the filling is different, some will argue that it's no longer a king cake. I mean, all this kind of stuff.
Oh, yes.
And what's interesting, I think, with you guys then is, in a sense, you guys are sort of the new kids on the block.
Very
with
much,
king
yeah.
cake. And yeah. 1.2 million views on Facebook for a non-promoted Facebook post, which is remarkable. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, and really in the first year that y'all are doing this, that you have a line outside or people showing up on the stoop, as you said, 3 hours before. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's like I said, I'm quite pleased at the effect that it has brought to the business, you know, doubling your sales is a problem, but then you also have double the sales to solve that problem with, so that really helps. But it's been really great. I do have these, you know, thoughts, just like, is this a mirage? Can this keep happening? I am already sort of thinking, like, all right, so can we catch lightning in a bottle again? Are we gonna make some St. Patrick's Day cakes? Maybe do like a, you know, do a, we do a I used to be Thin Mint, like the Thin Mint Girl Scout cookies,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, maybe we do that with a green icing. I know we've done cakes with Guinness in them before, so, you know, I don't know. Maybe we can catch lightning in a bottle and keep this going on. But
I don't think 1.2 million Facebook posts will happen with Thin Mint cake.
We don't.
I'm sure it'll do well.
But you know what? It also increased our Facebook reach, period, just from people liking us and following us by, you know, several hundreds of percent more. So we can put these posts out, and now, you know, 50,000 people see it instead of 20,000 or 5,000.
Right.
So,
right.
Like, it's a it. This is a very, very, very good thing. It's almost a rocket booster for the business. But gosh, am I a little tired?
I bet. And, you know, now that Mardi Gras is a little bit later this particular year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a longer carnival season than we've been having. Yeah. So I am not sure this will ever end. Like, I basically, as far as I know, the calendar just stops at Mardi Gras, and I'm not looking past it. Like, because I don't know what's going to happen anymore.
Right, right, right. It's just a blur of king cake and wine and all that. Are you guys actually open on Mardi Gras Day?
We won't be. So because of our location is very interesting. We are right next to the only interstate, or really the only way to break inside the parade box that is made during Mardi Gras.
Sure.
So I don't know if that will help us or hurt us or what have you. We are going to be closed basically through the thick of Mardi Gras through Sunday, all the way actually through till like the next weekend. So we can get poor Debbie can actually like sleep and not be making king cake maybe even several days.
Oh, that'll be nice. So you guys are going to close on Bacchus Sunday.
Yeah, Bacchus
and then
Sunday.
Open back and up on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, Friday or Saturday. Yeah. So, but it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, during muses and all that other stuff because you know, we're close-ish to the parade route. We won't be exactly accessible. But we are like right next to the only door to get into Uptown. So who knows?
I think you guys will be pretty busy. And given that, you know, we have neighbors like Barrel Proof and Courtyard Brewery around the corner.
We've got our own little district now. So that's nice. I've been trying to come up with like a catchy real estate name because you know how it is. I like the lower Garden District.
Well, that's what I always say to Liam whenever he's on the show as a proprietor of Barrel Proof in the lower Garden District. I like that too.
I mean, we can, you know, if we're more into brevity, we can just go with the low. I like that.
That's good. The LLG.
Yeah.
Down in the LLG.
it's been really great just like having these sort of local business alliances. You know, we are very, very close with French Truck. We serve their coffee. We're supplying them with limited supplies of king cake salty balls.
Okay.
And so, you know, we see them, they see us. We've got a very good collegial relationship with them. Barrel Proof is just the after-work bar for everyone within, like, three blocks of here. So.
Yeah, awesome. Jeff, hey, here's what we're going to do, man. We're going to take a little break here on the show, and we're going to be back chatting with a few more folks in a little bit, and we'll get you back into one of the segments here. Thanks a lot, Jeff. We're here at Bakery Bar. Come on back to the show.
The good times are rolling at the New Orleans Drink Lab this carnival season. Here, we'll do just that. We'll teach you the history and the tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them yourself. Masterclasses are fun, interactive, and very hands-on. Great for small groups or team-building activities. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience this carnival season. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. 343 Rhone Street.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Night for lust. Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. We're here at the Bakery Bar, 1179 Annunciation, doing what we do here once a month. And pleased to be joined at this particular moment by a nice bit of happenstance, Nathan Dalton and Mark Shetler. Nathan, you are the food and beverage manager, or director, right, at the Catahoula Hotel. Mark Shetler, general manager of Bartonique and Intergalactic Overlord, or should I say, president of the New Orleans chapter of the U.S. Bartenders Guild.
It's interchangeable, really.
It is.
Interdimensional.
Yeah, see, now we've gone interdimensional, as we were talking about here coming into the break.
Props where props are due.
Yeah, so you guys, Mark, you had a meeting today with the, you had a town hall meeting with the with the chapter.
Every quarter we have a town hall meeting. It's part of like our requirements for the organization. No alcohol served, but it's like the airing of grievances.
So it's festive. Yeah, it's in the middle of carnival season.
Exactly. Okay. We go in as a board and we recap the previous quarter's events. We talk about what we did right and what we did wrong, which I think is important for that accountability aspect to be there. And then we discuss what we've got coming up. What are, you know, that includes a wide variety of things, you know, events, but also kind of larger projects. Working on a scholarship program right now. We've got a lot of passive membership benefits. We've got the Southern Regional Conference coming up. But, you know, also just a charity event in the month.
Yeah.
And then we give time to hear everybody else's, what they want more of and less of. And,
okay. Well, let's do this, Mark, because Nathan's got to scoot to a meeting. So we'll get to the topic at hand, and then we'll come back to that, because I want to talk a little bit more about the USBG stuff with you
afterwards.
It's
your show, baby.
I am the intergalactic overlord of this little show. That's it. Actually, not even close to that rank. I'm like, you know, janitorial.
It's important to have goals.
It is. I'm aiming really high here. Bottomless mimosas, man. I have arrived, bro. So you guys, what we were talking about during the break as we pulled together a topic, talking about Pisco and Mezcal. And I think two very particular spirits that have a rich cultural component, which we've covered on the show pretty well with both of these, actually. As well as, I think, kind of seeing an uptick again, or a new uptick, if you will, in popularity in the market. And I don't want to throw anybody under the bus necessarily, but somebody said something to me about trends in the beverage industry, a professional in the beverage industry, and I mentioned they were talking about Pisco and how it's gaining in popularity again, and or actually talking about Mezcal, excuse me. And I said, well, what about Pisco? And the person said, well, I think the Pisco trend's kind of dying. And by the way, bartenders don't like it as much because it's harder to mix into drinks. And I'm thinking to myself, harder than Mezcal to mix into drinks?
How many bars does this person work at?
I don't know. It's a PR company. But yeah, so, I mean, what
crazy.
Yeah, so kind of, I mean, and you know, maybe in other parts of the country, I think we know here, and Nathan, maybe if you want to take this one, so many of the traditional New Orleans cocktails are built on, you know, brandy as an original ingredient. I think a good starting point maybe is you can pretty much swap Pisco in for that, can't you, with a lot of the stuff?
Yeah, because it's not hard to mix with.
And yeah.
I think it's pretty interesting looking at the parallels between the two liquors, between Mezcal and Pisco, because they're kind of following the same trajectory from where I'm standing. Pisco is just a few years behind. Mezcal, you know, for so long, all you could get is the Casano d'Oro and the Monte Alban. And then you had Del Maguey come out with, like, the good quality stuff. Mm-hmm. And everybody got on board. And then all of a sudden you had all these other Mezcal companies jumping on the bandwagon. And maybe I shouldn't say it that way because...
And also joining the market.
Yeah, exactly.
Entering the market.
Jumping on the bandwagon in America. You know, they've been doing it for generations.
Well,
out of
Mexico, and Del Maguey's been around forever. They just broke out. Market saturation, naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you look at the number of brands that are available in America as far as Pisco goes, it's kind of following the same trajectory. Every year you can get your hands on more and more brands. And Pisco is absolutely more easy to work with than Mezcal. And I love Mezcal, and I've been to Oaxaca, and I'm really passionate about Mezcal, too. But I have to be honest with myself and say Mezcal, for a lot of people, is an acquired taste. Like Scotch. I didn't like Scotch to begin with.
Right.
Smoky. Right. It's not. You don't grow up drinking things that taste like smokes, and it takes a little bit of time to get your palate used to it in a lot of cases. Whereas Pisco, I think, is a lot more accessible.
Yeah, and Mark, you raise an interesting point before we, you know, started recording the segment here, is that, you know, mezcal, and I mean, really, this is the case with Pisco, mm-hmm. too. We are talking about a finite product, meaning that to be Pisco or to be mezcal, it's got to come from the region. We're dealing with a geographic space. We're dealing with a limited natural resource, not even talking about some of the cultural threats and things to both of these distillates that we're talking about. But mezcal is expensive, man, like you said.
It should be.
Yeah, or it should be more than what it is.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, you know, one of the... There's a lot of people not qualified to talk about a lot of this stuff in the industry. I would argue, all due respect to people's expertise, I would argue that a PR person talking about the new trends in bartending qualifies as not qualified. but, I, you know, one of the most surefire ways for me to discount what a sales rep is going to say for the rest of the meeting is for them to come in and say, quote, "I've got this really great cocktail mezcal for you to try.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great price point. Da 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 da." It's like, okay, like, yeah. You know, like, calm down. Like, it's an interesting thing that, you know, without getting into whatever the reasons might be, that people have, I think, thought of conceptualized mezcal as being closer to tequila. And so we're, you know,
from a familiarity standpoint, you're talking about,
yeah, and the application of it, how they just think about the product that, you know, it's just like there's lots of different types of whiskey, and they think, oh, well, there's lots of different types of tequila, you know, whatever, and mm-hmm. mezcal is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technically, tequila is a mezcal, not the other way around.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's academic, right? But I think that we would be well served as an industry, and certainly that extends to consumers, guests, etc., to be thinking about mezcal more in the way that we think about scotch. You know, there's quote unquote cocktail scotch. There's great products, blended scotches, 12 years, you know, fantastic. But anybody who's, I think that even your everyday consumer or bar guest, whatever, understands that that's a very low baseline that they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And the real good stuff, you're paying a premium for. And that's what scotch truly is. Or like Japanese single malt. That stuff's not cheap. It's not supposed to be, and it ought not to be, and no one's asking for it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's where people need to be. I mean, you know, whatever. My drum to beat. But I think that we're well served to think about mezcal in that same sense.
I think that
it's
makes
not supposed
a lot of
to
sense.
Be cheap.
Yeah. And I think even Pisco, that would be a fair thing to say, too, in a sense, too, with... Again, dealing with a very limited geographic area and product that it's not to be, I guess, sort of trifled with in a sense, and that it's not something that should be $12 a bottle. I mean,
yeah.
the demand is not going to drive the price point to a certain point because the supply is just simply not there.
Yeah. Right.
Scarcity is required here.
Yeah, absolutely, for a lot of reasons. And another parallel I think you can draw between mezcal and pisco is they've both been made for centuries and centuries. They have a long, like, rich history, and it's not like
culturally intertwined
to the people.
Yes,
it's not like a fad. It's not like flavored vodka, you know, that people are excited about. It's going to fall by the waist. I mean, you have cocktails that are world famous made with pisco, spanning back 200 years, and now we can finally make that stuff again.
Yep.
So it's I don't see it as something that's a fad. It's something that's different than other liquors, flavor wise. It's accessible, palate wise. It's mixable, and it's got a history. A lot of these things you can say about mezcal.
You know, there's a degree, and you know, I don't know. Perhaps this treads on a territory of kind of overly politically correct, however you want to say it. But there's a degree of kind of cultural appropriation that comes with looking at things like pisco and mezcal as a quote-unquote fad or trend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very, I think that's problematic, you know, for people to think about them in that way. Like, you know, to sort of build off the point that you make,
mm-hmm.
right? That these things have centuries-long history before the American or the Western drinking market decided to quote unquote discover them. You know, it's like
exactly.
Columbus discovering the New World.
You are exactly right.
Man,
that's
that
a great
shit
point.
Was there before you got here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a great point. Yeah, and that, you know, I think just carrying on from that point, which I think is an excellent one, these beverages are not going away. Now, they may not be quote unquote trendy in the market, there are some threats, okay? As far as people making pisco for family reasons and people making mezcal for family reasons, for funerary reasons, all these things, it's still going to be made. Now, whether it's called something else or whether it's not found in the market in the United States anymore.
We're just tapping into that village or whether there's biodiversity to support what the category looks like now.
There are larger threats here that so we'll be qualifying that as very, very important.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you guys, we're going to take a little break here, and I know, Nathan, you got to scoot to a meeting.
I do.
So thanks for joining the show here and sharing some thoughts with us.
Always
and then, Mark, you can stick around, man. We'll talk a little USBG.
Yeah,
we'll
get some cake. Let's do it.
Let's get some cake, man. Folks, coming back to the NOLA Drink Show.
The Black Duck Bar is now open on the second floor of Dickie Brennan's Palace Cafe. Named in honor of the famous Black Duck Rum Runner, the bar features an extensive rum collection. Also noted for its small plates and charcuterie, the Black Duck Bar is sure to please. Join us for happy hour 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and try half-price draft beer, wine on tap, or a small plate. Stop by Palace Cafe at 605 Canal Street and try a delicious rum cocktail at the new Black Duck Bar.
It's carnival time. Are you ready for parades, revelry, and the ultimate cocktail experience? Victory is located in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission is to preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy this holiday. Give us a call to book your next private event. 504-522-8664. 339 Barone Street.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Well, after I'm through this bottle of wine.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. We are at Bakery Bar. Can't quite say live because we're recording this. If you're hearing it, well, yeah, there you go. I don't need to explain that.
We're live.
We are live. We are alive, and we are live. So there is that. And this doesn't really get edited. So,
equally exciting.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And this makes it so that we can just record. All right, whatever that means. I'm here with Mark Shetler, who is the, among other things, the president of the New Orleans chapter of the U.S. Bartenders Guild. Do we actually technically, how do we, what's the full official title of the NOLA chapter? How do we say it? We say
Whatever. I mean, New Orleans chapter of the United States Bartenders Guild, or
because I'm going to shorten
USBG
that
New Orleans, whatever.
Okay, so we'll just go USBG NOLA. Can I go to
Let's
that?
Let's do it.
All right, because you know, time economy,
I know. It's
economy of time here.
I know.
Yeah, so it's a cool organization. You guys, it's a trade organization, right? So folks that are obviously bartenders.
Yeah, the national, the umbrella, the United States Bartenders Guild is a 501c3, and then each local chapter is a C6.
Okay.
So we're technically a trade organization.
A trade organization.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 501c6, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so, and you guys do some interesting stuff. So it is like a guild, obviously, where, you know, people in the trade get together. And it's not just necessarily where I think maybe people would think, okay, what do y'all do? Get together and talk about how to garnish drinks. There's a lot more that actually goes on with USBG and USBG NOLA than that.
Yeah, well, we've prioritized over the last year with the current board that's in place is doing a good balance between educational, which could be how to garnish a drink. It could also be, you know, learning how to better balance your checkbook, you know, things like that. And social programming, which could be live band stripper karaoke at High Home Lounge.
Right.
And it could just be a happy hour at Bakery Bar. And charity work, Workday for Second Harvest, or we did a big bar crawl earlier last year to raise money for the Tequila Interchange Project. Raised a few thousand dollars there. And we do health programming in tandem with Tales of the Cocktail. So, you know, flu shots, exercise, you know, yoga classes, exercise initiatives like that.
Well-being and lifestyle stuff for members and things. Okay.
And then we also support getting people out of town to some of the other conferences, cocktail conferences and things that happen around the country. Just providing material support where we can for our members.
Yeah, that's cool. Good. And so you guys just today, you have a quarterly town hall meeting where members, and we mentioned that briefly in the segment before. Thank you, Jeff. Jeff Schwartz here delivering me.
Ooh, a grasshopper.
A grasshopper, which is a super minty.
Could I have an Ohen frappe? Yes.
Oh, hey, there you go. We're going hardcore New Orleans tradition here right now. Awesome. Beautiful. Good idea. You guys do this quarterly town hall meeting where folks come and you guys share progress from last quarter, things coming up in the next quarter, as you said in the last segment, the airing of the grievances.
Yeah.
So this is an opportunity for the membership to interact on a planning level and then a look back kind of level.
Yeah. So one of the things that we want, or that this current board that I wanted to make sure that was a point of emphasis for the 2 years that we're going to be in office, was increasing accountability.
Okay.
Across the board, and just the people who we're collaborating with in general. People need to know when something doesn't go right, who's responsible for that, and when something does go right, who's responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
So at the town hall meetings, we go through all of the programming that we did for the previous quarter, the ups and downs, for the downs, what the reasons for that were, and you know, for the ups, what you know, what we learned from both. And then spend some time hearing from the members about what they liked, what they did not like, what they want to see more of, what they want to see less of. We spend time talking about upcoming programming and discussing kind of our larger goals that are less material, less tangible goals. Larger programs that we're starting, or you know, we're right now looking at doing some programming for our Southern Regional Conference that we're hosting coming up in April. That's heavily focused on sexual assault and sexual violence in bars. It's a conversation I've been trying to have in the bar community for almost 2 years, but that requires, I think, a lot of responsibility on the part of the people putting it on.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, you know, only just now, I think, to the point where we can responsibly have that conversation. We've figured out a form and a format that we can do that. So that's something that people in the chapter hopefully now know, that if you want to broach that subject, we're working really hard on it, you know?
To have a framework, to have a good, useful conversation, I guess, to provide training.
And to make sure support. That we're having adult conversations about it ongoing.
Yeah, right.
We're not going to let this be a trend that just gets talked about for a few months and then put under the wayside.
That's good to hear.
So that's, you know, a larger goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about, we're trying to do an event with Campari USA on February 21st.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller, more straightforward, tangible event that we're doing.
You know? And this would be like some sort of tasting event or something like that? Or
something
is
like that. We try to not do straight tastings whenever we can.
Okay.
That depends on how soon the brand comes to us with the idea to collaborate, what their budgets are. You know, on March 5th, we're doing a bar crawl with Hood River Distillers. They have Lucid Absinthe and Jade Absinthe as their kind of their flagship labels. Ted Bro, who's a local boy, who is responsible with Lucid Absinthe for getting the Absinthe ban lifted a few years back.
Yep.
So the 5th is National Absinthe Day, and we're going to do a bar crawl, Cannon Table, Bourbon O, Old Absinthe House, Hotel Monteleone, have Absinthe drinks at each of them. The whole thing is going to benefit actually the sexual assault response team. Tickets will be available for people who aren't in the chapter. So we had a lot more lead time on that. We had a lot more involvement from the brand. And we're able to do more things with it.
Awesome. Do you find, Mark, and another beautiful drink. So Jeff just delivered you an Ohen Frappe.
Look, they're putting babies in it for
and
Mardi Gras.
And you're getting a Mardi Gras king cake baby. And a purple one.
I have to buy the next Frappe?
Yeah. So do you find, Mark, that, say, with some of the social issues, like the sexual assault stuff and things like that, do you find that there are certain brands that are responsive to this? I know we're talking about different things with Campari.
And many, many more who won't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Okay, yeah.
That's been one of the primary challenges, actually, in doing this, is, you know, I made the mistake, I think, for a long time of not looking outside of our industry. which is, I think, an all too common problem. We try to be bartenders teaching other bartenders, but we're not experts on anything but bartending.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about a little bit ago the seminar that I've been giving on conflict resolution and crisis management. There was copious amounts of research outside of the industry professionals that I talked to, academics, and because I'm not, I know how to break up a bar fight, maybe, but like there's a lot more to that subject.
How you overlay a topic like that and then apply it to a particular industry or situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that
100%.
And that's a tricky thing.
Right now, we're really, really lucky. Infinium and Carpano. Carpano Antica, Carpano Bianco, Punta Mas, Fernet Branca. Yep. Branca, that's the one everybody knows, Fernet Branca.
Yep.
And Branca Menta. And then Infinium is kind of the larger group that's over them, and they have a whole category or a list of spirits that they carry as well. I've got two great friends that are, one is the director of education nationally, and the other handles the East Coast market. Brent Falco, being the latter, and the former is Scott David Meyer. And they are really, really passionate about helping bartenders and making sure that our industry is better and more responsible and working, you know, being a more socially responsible thing. So they've been incredible to collaborate with. Scott's wife's got over 20 years in direct counseling in this same forum.
Awesome.
She's former director of some organizations. So we have finally a brand who's got the muscle and
the social disposition to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know,
they're motivated.
That's really cool. And Mark, what we got to do, we got to take a break here on the show. We're going to do a little bit more. You and I are going to do another show on this, maybe with a couple other guests coming up in the very near future.
Yeah.
So folks, stay tuned with that. And we're going to be right back here to the NOLA Drink Show. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
Hi. This is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market. Making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
The Black Duck Bar is now open on the second floor of Dickie Brennan's Palace Cafe. Named in honor of the famous Black Duck Rum Runner, the bar features an extensive rum collection. Also noted for its small plates and charcuterie, the Black Duck Bar is sure to please. Join us for happy hour 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and try half-price draft beer, wine on tap, or a small plate. Stop by Palace Cafe at 605 Canal Street and try a delicious rum cocktail at the new Black Duck Bar.
Dad's been shucking dozens since 42.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you at Bakery Bar, and we are joined once again with Jeff Schwartz, General Manager of Bakery Bar. So I'm trying to say hi, Jeff. And Steve Yamada has joined us from 12 Mile Limit and other things.
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Good to see you, as always. Last time you guys were on together, we talked about board games.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Any grudge match? Just quickly before we talk about what we're going to talk about, any grudge matches, any fist fights?
I'll just get it out there right now. Jeff beat me at a board game last night. It's still a little bit salty about it, but we're still friends. It's all good.
That's good. Okay.
We leave it on the cardboard.
I mean, yes, you leave it on, on the table. You don't take the grudges outside because, I mean, then you don't get to play anymore.
Right, nobody wants you back if you're not a good kid in the sandbox.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't play nice with all the trucks and blocks, you don't get to play with the trucks and blocks anymore.
That makes a lot of sense. And I like the self-policing nature here because there's not anyone saying, Jeff, go to bed, no dessert for you, put the trucks and blocks away.
Exactly.
Well, you guys, one of the things that we were going to talk about is we've noted here, if you're in New Orleans, you already know this. If you're not, you'll probably hear this, is we're in the middle of carnival season. And carnival season does involve drinking, I'm told. I wouldn't know at all. Never seen it, never done it. That's not true.
I've heard of it.
You've heard of it, yes.
I've heard of it and also done it and all of the other things, too.
Yes, I think we all have, right? Here, seeing, and Steve is just smiling and grinning. So, yeah, you can be on the record, too, man. It's cool. So, you know, and this is a huge topic to unpack. We'll do some more shows on this before Mardi Gras. But anything in particular you guys are kind of thinking carnival-wise, drink-wise, things we want to know, think about?
Mm-hmm. There's
an open-ended question for you.
Yeah, for sure. I'm on a personal quest to maybe learn a little bit more about the Oyen cocktail, which is the official cocktail of the crew of Rex.
Yep.
There is almost no record of the context, who invented it, when, where. You know, carnival secrecy somehow still rules the day in social media and wiretapping and everything somehow. Somehow they still maintain their secrets. So if Crew of Rex, if you're listening, I would like to see all of your menus and your archives and all that.
Well, you know, you bring up a really good point because the Oyen is anisette, as we've talked about, but it's kind of peculiar, and we don't want to go too far into the story, but it was made in Spain for a long time and a very popular drink here, and then basically that they stopped making it.
It was one small town in Spain selling all of their product to one small town in America, and that's not the best business model.
Sustainable business model. So very recently, past 3 years or so, maybe Peugeot's company there and their overarching
Sazerac.
Thank you. They brought it back and got it right from everything I understand.
That's my understanding. Like. Yeah.
I believe we were a test market for that product for a little while too.
Were you, Steve?
It was just, not us, but New Orleans. Was.
Yeah.
So
okay.
They were testing to see like how it would sell here if it was a viable product because I think it was on a limited run to begin with. So it is a permanent product in their portfolio.
Is it okay? Because my understanding too is that at least initially it was only available in New Orleans and no other markets because it was obviously sort of particular. So I wanted to kind of set the stage there. For that it's something that with say Rex, and I mean this was the point that we were talking about, the secrecy and the crew of Rex, you know, official cocktail, there's some record of it, I guess, as you were saying, Jeff, appearing on menus, but maybe there would be some interest in with them in getting some more information here to us, because if people don't buy it, it's going to go away and then they can't have it anymore either.
So for the public good, crew of Rex, if you're listening,
exactly,
let us in.
just let us in.
Yeah.
And anything in particular, Steve, that you like to make with O'Hanlon? Are you a fan of it in general?
With O'Han? Yeah. You know what? I do like anisettes for the most part, but I think I kind of came into the understanding of what O'Han was when it was not available. So for me, it was always that bottle that, like, Chris Hannah and Paul Gustings would always, like, have kind of a, oh, ha, 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 I've got some O'Han left and you don't have any left. Like, there was always this kind of competition between them and a couple other bartenders about who had O'Han left.
Yeah, you know, I know that it's actually distributed by Wines Unlimited, which is Martin Wine Cellar, and they, you know, I was kind of expecting at some point that, somebody's got to be sitting on some bottles there, but they made some fanfare about it a few years ago when they actually sold the last case.
Oh, yeah, I know, I think it was almost like negotiated where they're like, all right, give us one last run, we'll buy all of the cases.
Exactly.
And yeah, it was Martin Wine Cellar who was just sitting on cases for a decade and a half.
And then it was done. Sold out. Yeah.
Well, then the treasure hunt started after that too, of just going to all these neighborhood bars who had bottles that had been sitting there for like a long period of time. I remember going to the Chart Room at one point, and it's like, what's that bottle you have back there? It's like, oh, that. Just pour that. We'll drink all of that.
Don't worry about what it is. Just pour it.
Yeah. It was an old bottle of O'Han. It was just like, do you have any more of this? It's like, no, it's the last bottle. Nobody ever orders it. And it's like, all right, well. Might as well kill that one, too.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. And now after it's gone, you'll tell them the story, right?
Yeah.
By the way.
By the way, you can't replace that.
So it's an interesting drink, and you make a frappe here out of it.
So we, it's frequently done as sort of like a swizzle with cracked ice. I'm a huge believer in blenders. Every bar should have one.
Amen.
Amen, indeed. Like, it's just a tool. I understand why... I understand the sort of aversion, but ultimately, it's a really great tool that helps you make great drinks. So, yeah, everyone get a blender right now. Instead of doing it with, like, crushed ice and swizzling it, we just throw everything in the blender, and it comes out like this incredible sort of bubblegum pink sort of thing. At least the way I make it, where we add a little bit of orgeat to it, almond syrup.
Oh, you do. Okay.
It comes off... a little bit like a Good and Plenty sort of flavor. Very sort of confectionery sort of situation. And it's just fun. It's fun. It's really, really pink.
It's really, really pink, indeed. And, that's kind of my preferred way, like a sort of swizzle version. Neil Bodenheimer over there at Cure has basically just a cracked ice that swizzle it with the more pechos than you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
I think it's something you start with maybe six drops or something, and then you finish it with like another six or something like that.
Yeah, I'm doing seven.
You're doing seven total?
Yep. Yeah.
So what else, you guys, as far as Mardi Gras beverages go? Maybe thinking about something that people could take on the parade route. Any ideas there?
A gallon of daiquiri. I think that's... Stop in your local daiquiri shop, pick up a gallon of daiquiri. That's always a good get. If you're in the quarter, I very much favor the frozen Irish coffee at Aaron Rose. I try to not overthink Mardi Gras drinking too hard. Just like whatever's available, do it up. It should just be fun. I have in the past made like a punch using like berry shrubs, and that's fun. So, it comes out basically that jungle juice red. But it can taste like a grown-up drink.
Yeah, so maybe like something that a bunch of rum or something. What about, so batch it and take it out on the parade route? Oh, yeah. What about you, Steve?
Oh, for me, I don't, Mardi Gras is a day off for me. That's kind of a, sanctuary day for the most part. And it's kind of like you don't have to worry about what you're drinking. One of my most fond Mardi Gras memories was meeting up with a whole bunch of other bartenders, Chris Hannah, who we all love and know in the community. He'll put that effort into making a really great punch, and we'll meet on Jackson Square. But then after that, it's like, what do you do? And I remember one year we decided, let's go to Pat O'Brien's. It's like, how many times do we as bartenders, being all fancy the way we are, decide to go to Pat O'Brien's? And it wasn't crowded, and we hung out for a while, and we had, questionable hurricanes and a great time. It was one of the most fun times I've ever had during a Mardi Gras day. And it's like, you didn't have to overthink it, didn't have to be super fancy. It's like, that's kind of the beauty of Mardi Gras. You just like kind of give yourself to like the direction and the current that everything's flowing in.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. And I think it's kind of, if you're going to walk around town, if you're doing the parade route thing, like say on Bacchus Sunday or something, patching something up can be a good idea, because then you don't have to go fuss with anything.
Yeah.
But you can just take your thermos and fill it up with a little hooch.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're good.
I've got my own very specific Mardi Gras Day tradition, which is I walk down from my house. I'm usually not wearing very much, so I've got a fanny pack with a flask full of chartreuse.
Perfect.
And so, like, by the time I get to the French Quarter, I'm ready to party. There's usually some mind erasers at Fahey's. Like, it's time to get rowdy. And, you know, Steve is very much right. You kind of go with the flow on Mardi Gras Day, and you know it is what you make of it. So
exactly.
If you want to be a fancy lad, I guess you can. But I like getting in the streets and getting rowdy.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, we always like to say here is that don't try too hard.
No, absolutely.
Just
not.
Let it come to you.
Yeah.
Be yourself.
Yeah, I think definitely. I love going with the St. Anne Parade and starting out in the Bywater and making my way into the quarter. And I think the interesting experience with that is when you start out there and everybody's so dedicated to their costumes and like, you know, really embracing what Mardi Gras is. And then you slowly leech into the quarter and like it's more and more tourists eventually. Mm-hmm. And then it's just like, and they're looking at you like you're weird and you're like looking at them like they're kind of weird. It's just like, it's okay, we can coexist together.
Exactly, and then you just kind of watch St. Anne dissolve into the quarter,
yeah,
which is really fun. Real quick, Jeff, go ahead.
Oh, I really love that inversion on Mardi Gras Day, where like if you're just standing around in jeans and a t-shirt, you're the weirdo.
Exactly.
It's like, who's this guy? He's not even wearing a costume. I can't believe this. Yeah,
exactly. Jeff, Steve, thanks so much for being on the show today. I appreciate
Certainly.
It. Right and, hey, we're going to do it again next month, so I'll see you guys then.
Oh, yes.
Folks, we're going to take a little break. Coming back to the NOLA Drink Show.
But on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars, and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. We're closing out the show. Been a nice day here at Bakery Bar. Thanks again to Jeff and the gang here, everybody who's turned up. And Mark Scheller has come back to join us, and Steve's sticking around. Thanks, guys, for being here.
Yeah. I haven't gotten rid of me yet.
No, he's here. You're here. I saw you guys had some lunch. How was the food?
I had a delicious breakfast for brunch sandwich.
Yeah.
Same thing, but I also got the big bowl of grits, which when it came out, I was like, maybe this is too much food. And I was like, nah, I'm a fat kid. I can do this.
Well, the food here is fantastic. So we talked a little bit about Dobage and things like that, but the neat thing about here, full bar, make great cocktails. You can get cake and you can get the savory menu. So
yeah,
like really. Really good food.
I love that this is one of the places you can get a real good O'Hen Frappe.
Yeah, an O'Hen Frappe, exactly, and the overloaded mint grasshopper and everything else. Well, you guys, before we were chatting here, before we went back on the air, we were talking about this sort of pathological need for people to put things in boxes, and I think the way it manifests in lots of things, but in the food and beverage industry, bar world, spirits world, it's this top 10 list thing, the heat list thing, you know, where to drink in New Orleans now. I'm kind of thinking, where I'm sitting sounds pretty good. So, I mean, any thoughts on that? I think, you know, every market's unique, right? Every situation's unique.
Sure.
Well, I think one of the big things is you can't talk about lists and listicles and what's hot and everything without really recognizing, and I know it's been addressed on the show on multiple occasions as well, is just kind of the boom that the city is going through at the moment with the number of restaurants that have opened in the last couple of years. And I think what's most dangerous about being somebody who's so fixated, or you know, maybe a lot of media at this point being fixated on trends and putting things inside of boxes, is that it's you're only focusing on what's new and what's hot. And that's extremely dangerous. I mean, we're in a place right now, which I think, you know, Jeff and the team here have done such a great job of kind of developing a new neighborhood spot. And that's kind of like the goal I think everybody should be trying to do when they open a new spot, is to open a place that
that's part of the community.
Open that third space, something that enhances the community, as opposed to like, oh, well, pizza's really hot right now, so here's my pizza restaurant.
And then five more right on the heels, right?
Exactly.
And I think that's a great point, Stephen. I think one of the things we talked about this on the show last week, if you're interested in the podcast, on the restaurant business threats to independent sit-down restaurants and these sorts of things.
Yeah.
And your point, Steve, I think it's always that what's hot, what's trending, what are you doing new and different? And the point that I made last week with those guys was that, you know, I'm pretty stoked if I order a steak medium rare and it comes out medium rare.
Yeah.
You know, what's wrong with actually doing something that you normally do and just executing it well?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about what's hot, you know, whatever. I mean, you work at 12 Mile.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at Tonique. We haven't changed our menu in 5 years.
Right.
You know, like, I think we do a pretty damn good job at that bar, but we're not going to get on anybody's what's hot and what's not list. Mm-hmm. We've been there 8 years and we haven't changed a thing. You know, like, but there's value in that. You know, we try to make sure that we're a part of the community. Like you said, the third place, you know, and like when you have something that comes out as like a list, trying to put everything in this neat little box before it's been open for more than a month, you know, I think you do a disservice to some of those places too, right?
Right.
Yeah. People that have been doing something well consistently for a long period of time.
Well, and you set people's expectations that they're going to go into this place and it's going to be amazing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, My bar, your bar, we're going to do a better job. We've been doing it for a longer time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you encourage people, one of the many issues here, right? I'm not trying to, you know, bemoan the lack of publicity. I could care less. But, like, when you do that, though, the places where you really could be getting your best experience out of this city are overlooked. And, you know, that doesn't really help anybody.
I think that this popped into my head. Me and Mark actually shared a trip. We both went to Camp Runamuck 2 years ago. I had some whiskey summer camp up in Kentucky. Yep. Lush Life puts on. It's a really fun event. But we decided to spend a weekend in Chicago. Mark's got great ties in Chicago. I've got great ties in Chicago. And we decided to just spend a couple days in Chicago before we went to Kentucky. And we got up there and, you know, we're both familiar with the town and everybody's like, oh, we have to go to all these bars and do all this stuff. And like, we were both like, we don't want to do that. Like, you know, I want to go to the Korean restaurant that I love. I want to go to like Sportsman and hang out. I want to go to Delilah's, like all these places that, you know, and love. And we've got so many friends who work in all these bars, and we actually did get roped into a bar crawl. But I'd say it was probably my least favorite part of the trip was like, you know, bouncing from bar to bar. And
The only thing that was really enjoyable about it were the familiar faces we were with, you know?
Yeah. Most definitely. But, you know, a real bar experience is like a night at a single place, right?
Isn't that
like
the most fun you have?
Yeah, we didn't want to leave.
Right.
But, like, this whole idea of, like, when somebody walks into your town and they've got this list of 20 places that they have to go to, if they stop in a Tonique to grab one drink, are they receiving that full experience? I don't think so.
You're not getting the character of anything. It reminds me of traveling. And back in the day when I could do this, I used to backpack a lot in the developing world. And my old rule, if I didn't spend a month in a country, I didn't have come close to understanding anything about a country. And I think it's the same thing. I think your point's well taken, Steve, is that, you know, here in New Orleans, we have many, many traditional places. We have many new places. We have everything in between. Come here for a long weekend, if that's what you're doing, and pick 3 or 4 places and go experience those well, and then come back. I don't think you have to go run around, look at the top 10 list that says where to go drink in New Orleans now, and go to every single one of those and have one drink. I think that's a fantastic point.
Yeah, I mean, I was just kind of building off your point. I was just out of town in Singapore for a week, and you know, I didn't even go to the employees only out there.
Hmm.
Like, there's a ton of places that were supposed to. I didn't go to Manhattan, you know, one of the, number 8 bar in the world. But because it didn't make sense to do it, like, the places that we were going were super fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to 28 Hong Kong Street 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, this is we're trying to meet some people and like actually have the best experience possible. I'm not gonna run away from that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's something to be said for the devil, you know, and it's good, you know. It's providing the service that you wanted, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that the desire to put everything in this nice little, you know, packaged, digestible category, it can be problematic because that's not necessarily what bars are towards anyway.
Right. How do you think the consumer culture kind of like reflects that as well? Because, I mean, really, like we're talking about with listicles, it's there's a reason why they exist as well, is because that's how people digest their media now, and it's kind of like, right, you know, this ADD culture of like wanting constant stimulation. Like, it's something I always wonder about with that just like disconnect that we have with, like, you know, it's like we provide experiences and we have an idea of what we want our bars and dining experiences to be like, but then also, like, you know, I'm saying what I feel like to be like, you know, I want to go to a place and spend like 2 hours there. But maybe the consumers out there, they prefer to be able to hit like their top 10, top 20 or something like that.
I think that part of that, perhaps when it goes maybe a step too far, is when you get into just a list. Hmm. You know, when you're spending the time to actually engage in like a conversation about what the place actually is. Or you can do like a longer form thing. You might be getting into a little bit of chicken or egg territory, where perhaps that is what people want. But perhaps if people were being given quality in a different way, they would want that also.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for spontaneity as well. That when you get to a place, you meet locals, or you meet somebody, you meet a fellow traveler, who knows, another consumer, and they say, you know, yeah, you've got your Lonely Planet book, I'll use that analogy again, or you've got this top 10 list, and it's like, no, I just went to this place, it's fantastic, go check it out.
Right.
To me, so those are some of the best experiences with venues, with bars, with restaurants, and travel as well, is that it's that bit of advice that comes across. Well, you guys, you know what? I got to close out the show here. I really appreciate it. Mark, thanks for being here today. Steve, thanks for joining again. We'll do this again here at Bakery Bar next month. We'll do it again. We're going to be here the Tuesday after Mardi Gras. I forget exactly what that date is, March 4th, 5th, something like that. Tune into the show next Thursday. We're going to talk about the safety proposal here in town with the bar industry. It'll be interesting.
I can say about that.
Safety is a funny word sometimes,
yeah,
it sure comes out of a politician's mouth.
So, folks, tune in next week. And until then, cheers, y'all.